How y'all doing tonight? Y'all good? Man, this is an honor to be over here tonight, John. Thank you for having me. Man, it's such an honor. I've been looking forward to this for how long now, Cindy? 6 months, 5, 6 months, something like that. I really, really have. And I got a couple of folks I want to thank right quick, though. Like I said, I want to thank John and them for having me out here tonight. I want to thank Miss Naomi for coming through, my partner in crime at work, man. Like, that's you know, me and Miss Naomi, man, and Cindy too, man, John, you know, man, we do stuff like this we don't do it for the money, man. We do it to see people change their lives because we've been where you've been. You know, when I say Miss Naomi's my partner in crime, because she is, you know, some people come to treatment centers and they're less unfortunate than others. They're in bad places, and they can't get something. Me and Miss Naomi can find some kind of way and ease out the back door and make sure that they get what they need, whether it's a pack of cigarettes or something to eat or just something like that, man. And I don't know. Thank you for coming tonight. And then, man, Miss Cindy, man, I don't know, man. That woman means the world to me, and she don't even know it. And when I met Miss Cindy 3 years ago, man, almost 3 years ago, I was in a very, very bad place in my life. I was about as broke as one individual could be. And man, I don't know, she seen something in me and she gave me a chance that most folks wouldn't have done. Her and Mike Ming, and they gave me a chance that most folks wouldn't. Because little did I, and I didn't find this out until April of this year, when me and Cindy and Mike were sitting in Mike's office. You know, man, Mike Ming had all kind of folks call him. Remember him telling me and Cindy, don't take a chance on him. Remember that conversation? Don't take a chance on him. Send him on to prison. He won't ever get right. He ain't got no do right in him. But thank God they didn't listen, though. You know what I mean? And I talked to Cindy a lot on the phone, man, and some days I talk to her and she's just in a bad place, man, because somebody just didn't get it. But please don't stop doing what you're doing. You know, man, like I said, man, I was in a bad place when I met Cindy, but we'll get to that in a second, you know. But another person I got to thank right quick is my mama. I don't know where I'd be without my mom. Spending a lot of nights on her knees praying for me. I really, really don't. I put that woman through more stuff than most folks ought to put a mama through. But you know, but I get another chance today. Thank God. So I'm going to get started, you know. I was born and raised right outside of Greenwood, Mississippi. I was raised in the country. You know, and I didn't have a bad childhood, but I didn't have a good childhood either. My father was an alcoholic. My father could be mean at times, very mean at times. You know, he was mean to my mama, he was mean to me. You know, that's just the nature of a beast. That's just what alcoholics do, you know. But, man, I don't know. My dad loved me. I know my dad loved me. My dad just was, he was just an alcoholic. But, man, I don't know. And growing up, I got a little sister 3 years younger than I am. But growing up, man, like, I had to work. My dad didn't. I wasn't sitting up in my house playing no video games all day long now like these kids do today. Like, my daddy wasn't going for that. We lived in a house and had about 2 acres right there where we lived at. An acre of it was grass and an acre of it was garden, and it wasn't no zero turns and there wasn't no riding lawnmowers. Benny pushed the whole thing. And I had to work the garden, man. That's just how it was, man. My daddy believed in work. But I don't know, man. It was something about me from a very, very young age, like I just felt like I did not belong. You know what I mean? Like I felt like I didn't fit in with these people over here, and I didn't fit in with these people over here, and I was a very angry individual, looking for a place to try to fit in, you know, and I had stuff going on at home, you know, that made me mad. No kids at school made me mad, you know, I just felt like I didn't fit in anywhere I went, like I felt like I was alone. I remember going to elementary school, I think my mama stayed at the school more than I did. I mean, seriously, it was one fight right after another fight, right after running away from school, like just left school, like I just took off running. I wasn't going back to school no more. I wasn't going back home no more. I wasn't going nowhere. My mama just, I don't know, man, she's always been my rock. But she, like I said, she stayed at school more than I did. But I don't know, man, you rock on, you get on up a little age, you know, and, man, I remember laying in bed at night as a young child, and I said, man, I'll never drink. I'll never drink alcohol. I will never do any of that stuff. If it makes you act like that, I'm going as far from it as I can go from it. That was the biggest lie I ever told myself. Because at 14 years old, me and a couple of guys went on this little camping / fishing trip / nothing but getting drunk trip. You know, sit on a lake, drank whiskey and drank beer all night. And that started a spiral for me at 14 years old that lasted for the next 30 years until I was 44. And I'll be 47 next Wednesday. It lasted 30 years. But, man, you know, I rocked on drinking a little bit on the weekends. You know, and you think not nobody knows that stuff, but everybody knew I was drinking on the weekends. I wasn't hiding nothing from nobody. You know, they always, you know, and years later it got brought up and mama said, you know, you might have thought not nobody knew, but mama knew. You know, and then you get on up in high school, man, and I don't know, like I said, I'm going to high school, man, but I'm an angry individual. My buddy Benny right there, me and Benny went to school together. Benny can tell you, I was an angry individual in high school, man. You didn't say anything to me. You didn't look at me. You didn't do anything. If you did, we'd spend a fight. We would spend a fight. That's just how angry I was. You know, and but lo and behold, I started playing football, and I was very, very good at it. I excelled at it for the first time in my life. I excelled in something that wasn't trouble. But here's the problem with that. I could take my anger out on the football field that I had toward other folks. I could take it out, and you know, I wouldn't get in trouble for it. But here's the problem, though. I was still drinking on the weekends. And then around 17 years old, I found this little white substance called cocaine, and you can snort that stuff up your nose, and boy, I thought I was in hog heaven then, you know what I mean? I'm drinking and snorting, and again, I'm thinking nobody knows. And at this time, you know, I'm so good in football, I'm a big man on campus, you know what I mean? Like, hey, man, I don't want to go to class. I ain't got to go to class, you know what I mean? I'm not going to fail because I'm a star football player. I mean, I was in the eighth grade. I'm not bragging, but I was in the eighth grade playing on high school, you know what I mean? I was that good. You know, and could have went anywhere in the country and played football when I got out of school, but it ain't what I wanted to do. I wanted to party. I wanted to drink. I wanted to snort dope. I wanted to fight. I wanted to do everything else but what I was supposed to be doing. And so I got out of graduated high school, and I remember I sat around the house for a week or two, and my daddy was like, you're not staying here if you ain't working. My mom was adding about that, too. I thought it would be the other way around, but she said, you're definitely not staying here if you don't work. So so I got a job working at a catfish plant in Edelbina. working in the maintenance department. I worked my way up pretty big. You know, I had keys to everything at the plant. But on the weekends when I would work, you know, I was stealing fish, you know, and selling them. Support a drinking habit. Supporting a cocaine habit. You know, and I got caught doing that. I liked to went to jail and I liked to went to prison. That liked to be my first time in prison. I'll get to that in a minute. But man, I liked to went to prison for that. Thank God for my daddy. Because my daddy was able to get me out of that one. But, man, things didn't get better, though. They progressively got worse. I racked up in about 3 weeks of span of 7 DUIs in about 3 week period of time. Wound up having to go to prison for felony DUI. You know, and you would think that would open your eyes up. Sitting over there in Camp 29 in Parchman, you know, you would think that that would open your eyes up, dude, to not make you want to do that stuff no more, man. But, and at this period of time in my life, I want y'all to know this. I was the biggest liar and the biggest manipulator in the world. I could sell an Eskimo ice when he didn't even need it. Seriously, I could. The whole time I'm locked up, I'm calling my mama and I'm telling my mama, I'm not doing this anymore. If you'll just keep money on my books, if you'll just do this, if you'll just do that, when I get out of here, I'm living life right. And she did. Kept money on my books. And I was doing nothing but with that money, but making commissary for somebody else to buy alcohol and other drugs in the penitentiary. That's how I lived my life in the penitentiary. Getting drunk, getting high. Time went by quicker like that, so they say. But that was a lie, too. But, man, you know, when I get out, and I get a job working for this tree service called Divinity Construction. Well, this construction company called Divinity Construction. Man, I started cutting trees for them folks, cutting power line right of ways. And then again, that's one good thing that I never lost. I mean, I've always had a good work ethic when I worked. Like, I was going to be the best at what I'd done. And I made my way up to supervisor there, and man, we was going out of town working all the time, and I was staying drunk all the time, and still getting in trouble with the law. But here's where things just really start getting out of control. See, cocaine wasn't that good anymore. My body had done got immune to it once, so what I was snorting wasn't getting me high anymore, and methamphetamines were busting onto the scene at this time really, 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 really good. And I found out, too, that I wasn't no doctor, no lawyer, so I wasn't making enough money to support my cocaine habit. But I'll tell you what I could do, though. You could go buy $100 worth of meth, and you could stay up for 3 weeks straight. Never go to sleep. Never do nothing. Like, who wants to live like that? But I did, though. Because I thought I could stay up and I could drink more, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that was the miracle drug because I'm a drug addict, but I'm an alcoholic before I'm anything. So, and I'm thinking, man, I snort all this dope, man. I can stay up all night long. I can drink, I can drink, I can drink, I can drink. And I did. You know, but like I said, we're working out of town a lot. I'm just living in and out of motel rooms. And I don't know about y'all, but you take a country boy from the sticks who ain't used to having a whole lot. And you put him in these big cities like Jackson, Tennessee, and Biloxi, and down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and all these places, and you're living in out of a hotel room, man, there's a whole life out there you ain't never seen before. I started doing, my drug use got bigger. My alcohol use got bigger. My chasing after women and manipulating women got bigger. I mean, that's just what it was. Man, that life rocked on for a very, very long time. And, man, you know, I lost that job working for DaVinci Construction. And here's how I lost it, though. Check this out. So, man, I got in some more trouble with the law. And boss man goes, oh, my God, let's go away. I pulled over in Jackson, Tennessee, running through a school zone at about 80 mile an hour in a company truck. During the middle of the day when school was going on, blitzed out of my mind. And my boss man says, I'm going to make all this go away. But we're going to go to rehab. This is the first time I'm going to treatment center. So I go to a rehab, send me to a rehab in South Haven called Turning Point at the time. I think it's changed names now, but Turning Point was the name of it at the time. And this place was the biggest joke I ever seen in my life. It was just a mini vacation. I mean, it's in a hotel room on State Street in South Haven. There's women on one side of the hall, and there's men on the other side of the hall, and there's swimming pools, and there's anything in this treatment center that you want, just like it was anywhere else I want. So y'all know the outcome. But then, you know, don't lose my job then, but I get out of treatment and ain't nothing changed. Like I was there for 60 days, and I believe I was in worse shape when I left than I was when I got there. But man, you know, I went on to, got out, got to working a little more and got in some more trouble and had to go back to jail for a little while. Just, man, like, I just couldn't get it together. And then my drug use got so bad, my alcohol use got so bad, I didn't have a place to stay. And I had a job. But like I said, I had keys to everything at DaVinci. I'd drive a company truck in there every night. I only got off work. I would tell the guys that were working on the crew with me that I had a ride. I didn't have a vehicle. I done lost every vehicle I had. I would tell them that somebody's coming to pick me up. Y'all go ahead and go. Somebody's coming to pick me up. Nobody never picked me up. I'd unlock the office, go in there, and I'd take a shower. And I'd crawl up one of the trucks on the yard, and that's where I slept at. You know, and, man, I get in a little more trouble, and, man, I go back to another rehab, man. It's a cycle. You see what I'm getting at? It's a constant cycle. The life that we live is a constant cycle. But we're the only folks with the help of Jesus that can break that cycle. You know what I mean? So, man, I go through this cycle again. Another treatment center. Get out, same thing. Another treatment center. I can't count, 5, 6, maybe 7, I don't know. A couple of times locked up, I have no clue. It's a lot. We rock on the year 2014, and by then, you know, you read in NA and AA literature where it talks about a drug addict being helpless and hopeless. This was where I was at, my helpless and my hopeless point. In January, well, let me back up just a second. So about the time I started this cycle of alcoholism and drugism when I was 14 years old, My mom packed me and my sister up and told me and told my dad that he could choose alcohol or he could choose his family. And we stayed gone for 4 or 5 months, but eventually my dad got back together. My dad got saved. My dad quit drinking. My dad started going to church with my mom on Sundays. It was just like he turned his whole life around. So you got all these years from 14 to all this time and him trying to tell me, son, like you're going down the wrong path, like you don't need to do this. And I'm like, man, the way you treated my mama and the way you treated me when I was a kid, like who do you think you are telling me what I don't need to be doing? What gives you that right? That's just what I thought in my head. Like I wanted to hear nothing that he had to say. I did not want to hear it. But anyway, man, my dad was, like he was, as much as I know this sounds crazy to y'all, so there was a love-hate relationship between me and my dad, right? I hated a lot of stuff about my daddy. But I loved a lot of stuff, too, because my daddy was a man's man. When my daddy walked through that door, everybody in here was going to respect him, and that's just the way it was, and that's the way I wanted to be. You know, I like that part of my daddy, like I loved it. You know what I mean? And I don't know, my daddy was a hard-working man, even though he was an alcoholic. But in 2014, in January of 2014, my daddy decided that he was going to retire from work finally because he had an artificial leg and he worked all his life with that. And he just, man, health issues, hurting in his back, and he had emphysema from smoking 3.5 packs of cigarettes a day. He couldn't breathe, and he decided he was going to retire. Well, 3 days after he retired, he goes to the doctor because he's hurting so bad in his back. And he finds out he has stage 4 kidney cancer, and there's nothing they can do for him because of the emphysema because he's on oxygen. So, you know, in April of that same year, 2014, my dad passed away on the 24th of April. And then on the 27th, we buried my daddy. I'm going to tell you something that I'm not proud of, and it took me a long time to forgive myself for this. So, right after we buried my daddy, at a point in time, I had a little niece and a little nephew about this tall. I had a sister who needed me, and my mama needed me more than anything in this whole entire world during that time. But me, man, like, I'd held it together for 3 or 4 days there when my daddy was sick, my daddy died, you know, and no, I didn't. Left this little part out. Let me get back up to this. So on the 23rd, like I said, my daddy died on the 24th. The 23rd, me and my daddy, with my daddy on oxygen, man. My mama was sitting right there beside us. Like I walk in the house down there, man, the man, he said something to me, and you would have thought it was World War III. Me and him got the fist fighting in the kitchen with him on oxygen on his deathbed a whole 24 hours before he dies. So that, like I said, that Sunday we found my daddy dead. And like I said, my mom and them needed me, man. Like they really, really needed me. And you would have thought that I would have been there for my niece and my nephew and my sister, my mama, and been the person that they needed me to do. Because that was the last words my daddy spoke to me, even after me and him got in a fight. He said, I want you to promise me one thing. You're going to take care of your mama and your sister and your niece and nephew. And I said, I promise you. Man, what a lie. What a lie. Like I said, my daddy died. We buried him on the 27th of April. On May the 1st, 4 days after my daddy's in the ground, I broke in my mama's house. Stole the checkbook because me and my daddy had the same last name. same name. My daddy was Scott William Connor Jr. My name's Scott William Connor the Third. We had the same name. So for a month straight, from May the 1st to June the 1st of that year, for a whole month, I wrote over $7,000 worth of bad checks signing my dead daddy's name to those checks. I was in every city in the state of Mississippi just about partying and living it up and getting high and getting drunk and while my family's at home grieving the loss of my father. That was the lowest point of my life, one of the lowest points of my life. You know, so I, and mind you too, I don't know how I got away with it for so long because they had come out this time with them big square bulky house arrest bracelets. The first one I had on was a little pocket watch and you could maneuver it around and folks wouldn't know where you was, but they had come out with this big one with the GPS on it. And like you couldn't run, you couldn't hide, like MDOC knew where you was, but see, like I wasn't going to report. I wasn't charging the thing up. Like I was just running, man. I don't know how they let me get away with it for as long as they did, but that's how I was living. I didn't charge it up so they couldn't find me and I wasn't going to report and I wasn't taking no drug test and I wasn't doing nothing. I just wasn't. You know, man, that finally run out with me. They caught me. Got locked up for not reporting MDOC custody, and I found out I had another charge too. I had a charge of uttering forgery. Signing my dead daddy's name to checks. And man, I went back to the penitentiary. And man, I'm that type of person that I can make you believe anything. I'm not that type of person anymore. I used to be that type of person. So I lied to my mama the whole time I'm in prison again. Man, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. Guess what? I got out. Guess who was waiting outside the gates of Parsons to pick me up? My mama. Took me right back home. Like she's always done. Went and borrowed $1,000 from the bank, bought me a truck. 3 months later, I went back. I wasn't there 3 months, and I was gone again. Back to the races. Back drinking, back drugging. I was back doing it. You name it, I was back doing it. You know, and I'm on. You know, and that rocked on for a very, very long time. For the next 3 years ago, for the next 7 years, that rocked on. And it got bad, folks. It got real, real bad. Got where I didn't have no clothes. Like I had one pair of pants and I had one shirt and I was walking the streets of Greenwood. My family didn't want me to come to their house. My mama didn't want me. I mean, like nobody wanted me. My so-called friends that I used to spend all my money on getting drunk with and getting high with didn't want me. The only time they wanted me was when I had a dollar in my pocket and I could buy something to drink, some more dope. Other than that, they didn't want me either. You know, when I got caught, man, I'm running around, I'm stealing folks. I'm stealing anything I can to support a habit. That's just what addicts do. That's what I do. It's the type of drug addict I am. Put my back up against the wall when I want something, I'm going to get it. So I got busted. With it was way more than what that paperwork said it was, but that's neither here nor there, thank God. But I got busted with a lot of dope. And man, I remember going and getting bonded out. I got bonded out, somehow or another, I can't remember who bonded me out, but I got bonded out. Man, but I didn't stop right then, though. I went right on back to doing the same old junk I was doing when I got bonded out. And I remember it just like it was yesterday. Man, I had talked a friend of mine into letting me spend a night at his house, take a shower and change some clothes, and he did that. And I don't know, man, like something happened that night that I never thought I would get that low. I'm sitting there inside this little camper trailer and my friend's laying down and I done took a shower and drinking whiskey, and there's some lines of methamphetamines on the table, and I snort one line. And I snort another line. Took a big swallow of whiskey, went to snort the third line. Snorted it. When I knew where a 38 was in this camper, right? Grabbed a 38 and stuck it to my temple. Because I was tired of living. I was tired of living that life. I didn't know how to get out of it. I did not know what to do. I was at the lowest, man. I knew I didn't want to get high no more. I knew I didn't want to get drunk no more. But I knew, too, I didn't want to live no more because I didn't have nothing worth living for. But thank God for that night, too. Looking back on it, I thank God for that night, because that was a big intervention in my life, because that's when things started turning for the best. But for the first time in my life, Benny, I was scared to death. I was scared to death. I didn't want to pull the trigger. For the first time in my life, I was scared to death. So I called an uncle of mine, and he come got me, and he said, man, like, what do you want to do? And my uncle is like us, like he's one of us, you know what I mean? Like and he still is. I pray for him daily. He's almost 70 years old, and I pray for him daily because he just refuses to give in to this way of life. But he come and picked me up, and he said, what do you want to do? I said, man, I got court in 3 days. I said, I got court in 3 days. I said, take me to the Carroll County Sheriff's Department. Took him to the Carroll County Sheriff's Department. And when I went in, I won't never forget it. I walked in the door and I told him. I said, man, I tried to kill myself. I need some help. You know, I got court in 3 days, and going back to prison is not going to solve anything at all. Like, if I go back to prison, I will die. Either in prison or when I get out, I'm going to die. I'm just telling you now what's going to happen. So they held me till I went to court. And I went to court, and they sentenced me. And that's where I met my buddy Cindy over there, man. And 2 days later, I come to Ackerman for Cindy to do my assessment. And I remember sitting in there, man, and here's the funny thing. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember sitting in there when I had on a pair of blue jeans and I had on a black T-shirt. And I was sitting in there talking to Cindy, and I cried the entire time. I didn't think I could cry that much. And I told Cindy, I said, man, like I just, I said, man, I am. But I told Cindy, I said, man, I don't know. I said, I need help. I said, I need help bad. I said, my family don't want me. I said, I don't even want myself. I don't even love myself. And I didn't. And she said, well, I'm going to get you some help. I'm going to get you some treatment, you know, go to rehab. You know, and I told her, you know, like I said, she's God sent to me, man. God sent Cindy in my life in a place when I really, really needed it. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Because I told that woman some stuff that day sitting in her office that I had never told anybody in my life. And still to this day, she's probably the only person that knows some of the stuff that I told her. But I know this, that woman told me, she said, she called Jeff right then. And she asked Jeff if he would take me at the dentist center. And mind you, I didn't know whether Jeff would take me or not. Well, I've been knowing Jeff my whole life. And Jeff is, you know, Jeff's had to do some things to me in the past, so I didn't know whether Jeff would even accept me. Cindy comes back and she goes, can you be at the dentist center in the morning? And I said, yes. And when I say she's God sent, man, like she don't do this, but I'm not never seen her do this for too many people. But Cindy got up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and drove all the way to the dentist center and met me at the dentist center. And I remember after she left, and I remember sitting there on the couch, Naomi, you'll get a kick out of this. I remember sitting there on the couch and Cindy and them's gone, and I'm sitting on the couch and the door flings open and it's Jeff, and walks up there and he goes, I'm finna tell you something right now. You know I know you. I'm not putting up with no junk out of you. If you ain't gonna do what you're supposed to do, let me know now and you can go on and go to prison. I said, no, I'm good. I said, you won't have no problems out of me, I promise. And because I was at that stage in my life, I was broke, man. I don't know if any of y'all have ever been here, or maybe you're there tonight, but man, when you're broke, that's when you can be fixed. That's when the miracle happens, when you're broke. So man, I don't know, man, like this time when I went to treatment, it was totally different. Man, I didn't go in there to hang out with nobody. I didn't go in there to do this. I didn't go in there to do this. I went in there to get some help. When I had classes at the dentist center, I was sitting in the very front of the class. When we wasn't having class, I asked Dube over there. Me and Dube was in treatment together. I was in my bed reading this or reading some other books, man, I was reading. You see, man, like, I don't know. Like, it was just like I was just at that road, man. Like, I knew if I leave this treatment center, I wasn't worried about going to prison. I was worried about dying. Prison didn't scare me. The thought of going back out there and snorting that crystal meth back up my nose and picking that 38 up again is what scared me, because I knew if I went back out there, the running was over, because I was going to take my own life, because it just got that bad. And every time I had ever stopped for a little bit and got back out there, it got worse. And see, and I'm the first person in here to tell you, like you hear a lot of folks say, well, man, I relapsed, or I slipped up, or I did this, or I did that. Me personally, I don't believe in relapse. Because the 7 times that I went to treatment before, I had in prison, all of it. Wasn't no relapses. I didn't have no intention to stop. No way. I just didn't. See, people that relapse, they relapse because they don't want to put in the work. They don't want to surrender. They don't want to give up. They don't want to stop fighting. It's like you hear people holler, well, they're chronic relapses. No. Something in their life they don't want to get rid of is what it is. But anyway, you know, man, and I remember telling Cindy too, and I wish he could have made it tonight, but Billy had something he had to go do. He just texted me while I was sitting down there and said something had come up. But I told Cindy, I said, man, like, well, Like, what is this going to solve? You remember that? I told her, I said, what is this going to solve? This is 90 days, and I'm back out on the streets, man. With nowhere to go. Cindy said, you don't worry about that. You let me worry about that. She left the den center that morning after she dropped me off and called the folks at the last house on the block. Told them that I would be at the Denton Center for 90 days, but to save me a bed. Nobody had ever done anything like that for me in my life, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me. The best thing that ever happened to me, because I remember, and y'all had to know Billy like Cindy knows this. Like, y'all got to know Billy. I know John does. Like, y'all got to know Billy. Like, so, like, Billy's got this crazy sense of humor, right? So, like, when you go over there, like, they supposed to write you, or you supposed to write a letter to be accepted to the last house, and he does his phone interview, right? Or, like, they do that, like, 2 weeks before you get out of treatment. So, I'm sitting there, and it's the day before I'm supposed to leave Greenville, and I ain't heard nothing. I done wrote the letter, John. I done all this. I ain't heard nothing. Supposed to leave that Wednesday. Billy calls the Darden Center at 8:30 that Wednesday night and says, tell him I'll be there in the morning around 7 to pick him up. And I was like, oh, my God. Because, like, I hadn't talked to him. I didn't do no phone interview. I didn't do none of that. But, man, I wish he was here tonight because he has been a big part of my recovery. I wouldn't have found Jesus Christ, if it hadn't been for Billy. See, Billy picked me up, and when Billy picked me up in Greenville, it's an hour and 45-minute ride back to Columbus. And we started crying when we left Greenville. I was crying, and he was crying, and for an hour and 45 minutes, we talked to each other, and we cried all the way to Columbus. See, I've been through a lot of stuff. Billy's been through. We've been through a lot of stuff together. But, man, I don't know. Billy told me by the time we got the wine on, he looked at me and he said, son, what do you want out of life? I said, Billy, all I can tell you right now is I don't want to put no more dope in my body. I don't want to put no more alcohol in my body. And I don't want to die. See, I had made peace while I was in treatment that my family may not never talk to me again. I had made peace with that. Because I knew that I had not been the son, the brother, the uncle, or the nephew that I should have been. And I did that, so I manned up and I had made peace with it. But, man, God had other thoughts, you know what I mean? But Billy said, man, if you just buy in, bro. Remember, he just said, if you'll just buy in. And I bought in. I bought in big time. Because I'd already bought in. Because, see, I remember, like, being at the Denton Center, like my third or fourth night there. Like, you got to remind you, man, like, I've been drinking a lot of liquor, a lot of whiskey, a lot of beer, a lot of stuff, and doing a lot of dope. And when you drank the type of as much alcohol as I drank and done as much dope as I done, coming down off that stuff will make you sick, 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 sick. When I was in detox at Denton, I'm backing up just a little bit because I want to get this part out. And, man, the first 7 days I laid in that detox room like I thought I was going to die. I remember Jeff coming in there checking on me a couple of times like I was in bad shape. You remember that? I was in bad, bad shape. Like, they thought I was going to die. And then Jeff, like Jeff always is, Jeff's like, oh, he's tough. He'll be all right in a day or two. But I was, I pulled out of it. But see, here's one thing that happened, though. I remember about the third or fourth night there, I crawled down out of my bed one night at 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning. I was in tears. I was crying. Thought I was dying. I was hurting all over. And I crawled down and I knelt down beside my bed. And I said, God, I can't do this by myself. I cannot. I will not. There's no possible way. I said, but if you'll help me get through this, I will do whatever you want me to do. You know, so I rock on. I go to the last house on the block. Man, I'm over to the last house on the block. I get there in like June, end of May, 1st of June. And like I said, I had made peace with my folks not talking to me, man. Like, I, you know what I mean? Because I did it. So I get over there and I call, and you know, sometimes they'd answer and sometimes they wouldn't. And Billy kept telling me, just keep praying. Just keep praying. Just keep going to these meetings. Just keep going to church. Just keep giving it to God and watch what happens. So Thanksgiving night, like I said, I'd been over there since June. So you're looking at 4 or 5 months. Thanksgiving night, I get a phone call. And it was my baby sister on the phone. First time I talked to my sister. A decent conversation since my daddy died 7, 8 years before then. And my baby sister said, I'm bringing mama over to see you in the morning. What I thought was impossible, God made possible. God allowed me to, you know, and they didn't want me at home right then. Y'all got to understand, my sister's hardcore, man. My sister said, no. She said, you can come over. She said, we'll come over and see you on the weekends, but you're not coming home. And I was cool with that because at least I knew that I had some type of relationship. So they'd come over there about once a month and see me. And but anyway, you know, I said, man, it's going to be Christmas, and I ain't going to get to spend Christmas with my family like another Christmas. You know, and I was getting ready to give up. I was, you know, and like, I really, really was. Because I remember calling Billy on the phone, and it's like the 22nd of December, I remember calling Billy on the phone, and I was like, man, I'm finna go. I said, I can't do this. I said, man, you can call. I said, call Mike and Cindy, tell them I said thank you, and just tell them to come get me. Like, I can't do this. I'll just go on and go do my time, man. I'm sitting up here with 23 guys and 19 of them spending go home, see their family for Christmas, and I can't go see mine, man. I'll just go on and go to jail, man. Like, this ain't worth it. Like, it just is not worth it. Then again, I tell you, y'all got to know Billy. Billy said, I ain't calling, tell him nothing. You want him to know, you call him. Then I hang up the phone with Billy, and but God, man, there my little sister was called again. She said, when can you leave for Christmas? I said, when can you be here? She said, I'm on my way now. So I got to spend Christmas with my family. And man, like, man, once I said that prayer that night beside that bed in that den center, bro, God started showing up and showing out in my life in ways that I never thought possible. And he already had through when I first met Cindy. You know what I mean? That's the reason when somebody asked me to speak over here tonight, I said, you most definitely, yes. And anything else she asked me to do, I'm going to do it because she never let me down. But, man, I don't know, man. God really started showing up in my life. Man, I went on March the 6th of last year. In January of last year, I had got saved. And I wasn't having nobody else baptize me but Billy Jordan. And then nobody else. I told the preacher at First Baptist Church in Columbus, I said, you're not baptizing me. I said, if you got to baptize me, Now, me and Billy will get a swimming pool, and we'll do this at last house on the block. You are not doing it. But with Billy being a preacher, you know, he let Billy do it. And that was the best day of my life. Because that day that I got baptized, sitting on the first row of that church with my mom and my sister and my little niece. I won't never forget that. As long as I live, I won't never forget that. And then, you know, man, God just keeps getting better. Even in the storms and the trials after that day, God just keeps getting better, because a couple of weeks later, Rock On, and man, I go home for the weekend, and man, that's when that tornado come through the whole state of Mississippi. See, I finally got to make good on that promise I made my daddy that I'd take care of my mom. You know how it is in the hills, man. We don't like where we live at, like, tornadoes always raise up over that hill and they sit down over this way somewhere. Like, they don't never just climb up that hill and stay on the ground. Well, when that sun gonna come across the Mississippi River and touch down in Rolling Fork, it stayed on the ground all the way they got to Black Hawk, Mississippi. And you could hear it. I won't never forget that sound. I was laying across the bed watching TV, and I told my niece and my nephew, I hollered, go to the bathroom. And I jumped up out of the bed, and my mom was sitting in a recliner, and my mama's not in good as health as she used to be, and she can't walk as fast as she used to could, and a whole lot of other stuff. But I grabbed my mama by the arm, and this dead gun picture flying around the house, and windows are sucking in, and my mama's trying to grab his picture of me and my sister that I took when we took together when I graduated high school. And I said, forget that picture. Well, you can get another picture. Let's go. But I finally got the picture. And as quick as I got my mama in the bathroom where my niece and nephew were, I wrapped my arms around the three of them. And the whole roof flipped off of that house, all but right there over top of that bathroom where we were. And I remember playing. I remember saying a prayer right there in that bathroom, around with my arms around my mama and around my niece and nephew. I said, God, I don't know what you spared me once again for, but whatever you spared me for, whatever you want me to do, I'll go do it. I'll go do it. Whatever you spared my life for the 13,000th time, I'll go do it. You know, because I look back, you know, me and Benny were talking about this on the way over here. You know, and you'd have to know mine and Benny's. Well, you'd have to know my past, but you'd have to know Benny's. Benny's been sober a year yesterday. I'm so proud of you, dude. Love you. But, man, I got to thinking on the way over here, man. Me and Benny was on the way over here. And man, I was thinking, if you'd have told me 3 years ago that me and Benny Corley would have been coming from Greenwood to Ackerman on a Saturday night to come to a church, I'd have told you was crazy. You know, we might have been going to do a lot of other stuff, but we wouldn't have been coming over here. But I said that to say this, though, man, but God, you know what I mean? But God, you know, and I, you know, like I said, you know, I told God, you know, whatever you want me to do, I'll go do it. And I have, you know, I went back to Columbus. Man, I had a good job in Columbus, a good job. And Columbus has got a special place in my heart. I cry today when I think about it, because it'll always be home. Because Columbus, it just, that town saved my life. God sent me to that town for a reason with that group of people. And I got to see God in people that, you know, I got to see God working through people like me to know that there's a chance, there's a hope for us, for the people sitting in this room. If I can tell you anything, I will tell you this. Don't give up. Quit running. Quit fighting. I tell my guys at the Dent Center all the time, before I say that what I tell them, let me get to this. So, man, I go back home. I go to Columbus. I got this jam-up job, man. I'm making $17, $18 an hour, and I'm, man, you got to remind me now, when I come to Ackerman, like, I had to catch a ride. By this time, I got my own ride, you know what I mean? I got my family back, you know what I mean? Life's really looking up. I'd never seen myself leaving Columbus, Mississippi. It's the hardest decision I ever made in my life. Me and Billy Jordan talked about it for 2 months. Me and Cindy and Mike Ming talked about it for 2 months. It was the hardest decision I ever made in my life. But I remember Jeff, Jeff's persistent. Y'all got to know Jeff. He just kept calling, and he kept calling, and he said, man, I want you. You know, and I'm going to tell you how God works, man. Like, my mom was getting ready to have knee surgery again. Like I said, my mom's not in the best of shape no more, and I got to be there for that. I get to be there to help my mom today. When she calls, I'm right there. Like she's always been for me for all these years. You know, and man, you know, getting back to what I was going to say, you know, I tell my guys at the Dent Center all the time, you know, we're not bad people. There's not a bad person in this room. We've just made bad choices in life, but we're not bad people. Man, when you think he can't, God can. When you can't, he can. I've seen it not only in my life, but I see it in men's lives today that I sponsor and I'm their accountability partners. I see it in their lives. You know, and I'm not going to name any names, you know, and because I'm not supposed to do that, but Naomi will tell you there's a couple of folks sitting in this room tonight that, you know, we have staff meetings at the Dent Center every morning. There's a couple of folks sitting in this room tonight who just, you know, it was brought up in a staff meeting that, hey, they won't never make it. They're going back to prison. But let me tell you something. But God, man. But God. But God. Man, so I'd move back to Greenwood, take a job at the Dent Center, took a whopping cut in pay. My guy had to be lost my mind. But I remember that's the thing Cindy told me. Cindy said, you do realize you're going to work for the state, right? Like, you do realize that the state don't pay any money, right? But man, I don't do it for the money. I do it for the people like Cindy and Billy Jordan and those type of people that poured into me, that showed me the love of Christ when I didn't even love myself. You understand what I'm saying? And that's the reason that's what I try to show my guys today at the Dent Center. I love you if don't nobody else love you, man. I got you back when ain't nobody else got you back. You know, and there's a lot of guys in here, man, like, just to see you here, man, like it touches my heart, man. And I just want to tell y'all this, man, and then I'm going to hush. I know y'all getting tired of hearing me, but I just want to tell y'all this. You know, I used to think all the time that if I surrendered and told somebody, hey, I need help, I can't do this by myself, it meant I wasn't a man no more. It meant I was less than. Surrendering is what cowards do. Surrendering is not what cowards do. Surrendering does not mean you're less than. Surrendering does not mean that you're less than anybody else in this world. Surrendered means that you are a real person, man or woman. When you say you can't walk through life alone, because there's not a person in this room that can walk through life alone. You know, we all need Jesus, every one of us. And he can, and you know, man, and it's an old saying, you know, he can do for us what we can't do for ourselves. I know in my life, as you've just heard, if he'd have ever took his hands off the steering wheel, like I wouldn't be standing here tonight. And I know that there's some people in this room that can relate to that. You know, man, and John said it best, man. And here's the thing that I want to encourage y'all folks to do. Like, I'm from a rural area, too. I know how hard it is to do things in a rural area. Me and Benny's got some stuff we're working on back home, and me and a couple of more folks do. Man, I want to encourage y'all, man. The man says open door policy. Man, I want to reach out to you. I want to encourage every person in this room. Man, if you need somebody to talk to, walk through that door and talk to that man. Let him help you. I wish somebody would open the door for me a long time ago. Told me I had an open door policy where I could come in and give him my problems, and he would help me with them and drink a cup of coffee with me and show me love. I want to encourage any of you, walk through those doors. And a lot of folks in here are on drug court, 95% of us. Cindy cares, man. Talk to her. You understand what I'm saying? Talk to her. For you guys that's in here that's done been to the Denton Center, the phone number's still the same. Whether you need treatment or whether you need somebody to talk to, you call. If it gets that bad and you think you got to go put some more dope in your veins or another drink of alcohol, you call. When you tell them Will told you, call. When you tell them you ask to speak to me or you ask to speak to Naomi, we'll talk to you. I promise you we will. Because, man, that's what we're here for. You know, man, like I don't regret. I tell people all the time, I hear people all the time ask me, Will, if you could go back and change anything, what would you change? And I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't change none of the drugs. I wouldn't change none of the alcohol. I wouldn't change any of it. Because it made me the man I am today. It made me that person that knows that I need Jesus. It made me that person that knows that, hey, we all struggle. Everybody needs a little help along the way. You know, and then I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to sit down. I was going to ask you for yours. You better be glad I brought mine. Well, Jeremiah 29:11 says this. It says, for I know the plans I have for you. This is the Lord's declarations. Plans for well-being, not for disaster. To give you a future and a hope. And let me tell you something. God didn't intend on any of us to have to struggle. Life's hard. Life's hard. Everyday life's hard. But God didn't intend on any of us to have to struggle with the use of alcoholism, drug addiction. You know, give it to God, folks. Give it to God. Because here's the thing. Whatever's making us use the alcohol and the drugs, that's just a cop-out. The alcohol and the drugs are a cop-out. There's another reason why we do what we do. Man, I just want to leave y'all with this. Just give it to God, man, and take advantage of every type of resources that you have. I love y'all. Thank y'all.